clap.
Seconds.
I feel like you did that a lot on your feature film, your low budge feature.
Dude, well,
the clapper. Hand clap.
We had the luxury of being time code.
Oh, fancy. That's a fancy low budge, man.
In this episode, coming off his recent premiere at Cannes Film Festival, we chat with writer-director Lloyd Lee Choi.
What are you working on, like, at the moment?
Oh, man. I mean, commercial-wise, it's funny because I haven't done a commercial since last November. So really? I took a very conscious break for this year to... now I need to work because I need to make a living and pay rent in Brooklyn. But, I took a very conscious effort to step away. 2021 was my busiest year by far. And I'm like, I need to step away and really commit to, the next step for me.
Yeah.
And that's, the unknown of features and TV.
Yeah.
And so I did a couple short films, one in 2021, called Same Old, and that, had a surprising run in the festivals.
What was it like going to Cannes with that? Did you actually get to go? And
I did. Yeah, it was a trip. It was, that was my first
Cannes
film
wild,
festival.
Isn't it?
It's my first film festival ever. And
it's a great first one.
It was a trip.
It's all downhill from there. No, I'm just kidding.
I think it was an affirming process because, and a joyful one. A lot of my friends from Canada came, and the people I, really started out with, and some of the cast and crew, and it was like a celebration over a week.
It's a daunting place to be at Cannes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much reverence there for films in general.
It's cool. They really do love movies and you feel there's an energy. I mean, in every festival, there's definitely an energy which just kind of keeps you going in some ways. It's such a hard, lonely process. And sometimes you need to experience that, energy.
And it's like, it's French. So it just feels more important.
A little more fancy. Yeah. I mean, but it is like a lottery too, right? I mean, a lot of the festivals, It's really cool to get in, but it's, this obviously so many rejections as well. And it really is, you got to think of like the process of how they choose your film. It's through thousands of applicants. It's, what is the lighting at the time they watch your film? How are they feeling personally?
Yeah.
There's so many aspects to your film being chosen. So when, I got the call for Cannes, I was like, this is a scam. Like, there's no way. It's like the odds of getting in is like, there's no way we actually got in. And, it's a funny story.
So they call you though.
They try to email
or anything.
No, he had to actually email me. So funny story. I was actually filming my second short film this past, May. I kept getting this call on set from this random number, like this +33 number. I'm like, oh, it's just another scam
call.
It's a robocall. I kept declining it probably like 4 or 5 times over 3 days.
They probably know too. They have to keep at it.
You have to keep at it. And then he emailed saying, hey, why aren't you answering your phone call? I want to talk to you. And then I called him back and he said, oh, we'd love to accept you into the program. I'm like, oh, wow, incredible. But then in the back of my head, I'm like, this is still a scam. Like, this is a really elaborate scam to get my social security number and to take all the money that I'm bleeding through not having worked for so long. And so the producer and I, we did like a little background check. We Googled him.
That's so
funny.
Had
to make sure this is not a very well orchestrated scam.
Yeah.
And, the chances of getting in are so small and we feel so lucky to get in, obviously, and it opens so many doors. But it is like, we were rejected by so many festivals before that point, to get into Cannes.
Isn't that crazy, dude?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause you would think if I get into Cannes that it should be sort of a shoe-in, but it just goes to show the craziness of the crapshootness of the festival world.
It is so subjective.
Yeah.
So subjective. Yeah.
What did you think that they saw in your short? You know, that that made it sort of stand out?
I think they did a really good job when you watch all nine films together in the program. Mm. It's a really well orchestrated, you know, I guess, encapsulation and just sort of portrait of stories around the world. Yeah. It really felt like a global screening in a really beautiful way. Like, that was actually probably one of the best curations that I saw when having toured the festivals a bit.
So you said that you're kind of moving into maybe trying to make it a feature, right?
Yeah.
What was that, like, give me the gap between going to Cannes, TIFF, like all these other festivals, into, did somebody approach you to, like, how did it all work, you know?
I think after we did the short film, I immediately started thinking about, you know, the feature adaptation and the possibilities of the story. I felt like we didn't really fully dig into this character and this world, and I was craving a little more time, I think. After Cannes, it became more of a reality, like, oh, I think this is a great proof of concept, and I think, you know, producers and production companies can see the possibilities of this feature. So that's when I really kicked it into overdrive to write the script.
Yeah.
And it took a few months to write it, but it's still a process. As you know, like, mm-hmm. having made your first film, it's a many year long journey.
I don't think you ever stop writing.
Yeah, true. I mean, the script is interesting. I really do treat it like a blueprint. Like, I don't get too precious about, like, some of the dialogue or some of the, as long as, like, the framework is there, the sort of the overall story and structure is there as a blueprint, and you can schedule it properly. I think that's all I care about. And,
did you know sort of that there was going to be a chance maybe that it could be a feature?
I think the film came from just being pent up, you know, from the pandemic and quarantine and having shot so many commercials in a row. I'm like, I need just to make something for myself. and never really imagined it as a feature when we made the short initially, like, in the process of, like, pre-pro and production. I'm just like, let's just get this done. Yeah. I just want to sort of get this out of me first. And I think when we finally wrapped and released the film and got the reaction, I think that was when, you know, it sort of gave me that extra juice to keep going with this and to expand the story a little more.
Yeah.
For me, like, it just started with me messaging a good friend of mine, Norm Lee, the DP, and just saying, like, let's just shoot a movie. Like, we're both here in New York. We have nothing to do. You have a camera. You have a tripod.
Yeah.
Let's just go make something. Let's not wait around, you know, be precious about it.
I feel like that's probably an issue with a lot of, at least people that I know, where it needs to be this scale.
You really just have to do it. I think there's a lot of people, even for me, I was very, almost too precious about trying to get it perfect with past projects, and they never get made.
Yep.
And I'm sort of kicking myself not making something sooner. You know, I think a lot of people maybe look down on short films a little bit, you know? It's like, oh, it's either make big budget commercials or music videos or feature films, and the short films are to the side. But for me, it's like, it really is such a beautiful exercise in just, like, honing your craft and, you know, making mistakes.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard in music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. From indie artists on the rise to leading composers, MusicBed has curated the best roster of musicians for your films. Go to musicbed.com and use the promo code Lloyd to get your first month free on a standard subscription. That's Lloyd, L-L-O-Y-D, at musicbed.com.
Do you get upset when you see people spending $100,000 on a short?
If you have the money, go for it.
when I hear that, I'm like, why didn't you just make a feature? You don't think you can make a movie for $100,000?
Yeah.
Just go make a feature.
Yeah, I know.
Why are we doing the shorts for $100,000? I don't know. To each their own. If you have the money.
Just... Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Even the idea of making a feature for $100,000 right now seems pretty daunting.
What is, like, when you look at the feature, what is your sort of ideal situation? Do you know what I mean?
Probably like 100 days, about 10 million, you know, maybe half a scene a day. That's the dream. Yeah.
100 days, man. Can you imagine?
Oh man. Like those Nolan movies, right? They got 100+ days.
Yeah. They're probably doing a scene every 2 days. Wouldn't you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, they talk about some scenes taking like a week to shoot, you know, which are, you know, huge orchestrations and stunts in it. So I get that.
Sure.
But, like, I don't know. It's funny. Like, when you go from commercials and short form to features, there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, on how your body can take it.
Yeah, let me pick your brain on sort of the commercial side a little bit.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
I think who are you signed with again?
Division 7.
Division 7. What do you think was, like, kind of the turning point?
Hmm.
Maybe in your work versus, like, getting the boards that you kind of maybe want to see. I know you're not always getting what you want, but... Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may have a similar experience. Like, it comes in waves, right? There's always like cycles and chapters where you have periods of a ton of work coming in. You're winning every bid. And then there's periods where you're losing everything.
Yeah.
And I imagine every director goes through that. I think the turning point, though, was when I took more chances on... You know, the PSAs. Actually, the work that really moved my reel and the needle for me was the really low budget stuff that I didn't get paid for.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And it just gave you a little more creative freedom. You know, and I think it showed my chops and what I can do as a storyteller and what I wanted to do as well in the commercial world. A lot of, you know, you may have this experience as well. When you go to like a much higher budget level, there's a lot more voices and there's a lot less freedom. You know, I think what the agency pitches to the client is sort of what is expected.
Yeah.
Right. You're coming in so late to the process. Yeah. You're really there just to execute a vision and really do as much as you can to make it the best it can be. But it's really their project, you know?
Yeah. What is the idea... Or how do you feel about the idea about getting paid for treatments? Can this happen?
Oh my God.
In our lifetime.
Yeah. This needs to be a thing, I think. Yeah. You know, commercial directors, obviously, we get paid, we get compensated well if you do win a job, right?
If
you do win a job. But there are periods where I've lost, you know, 6 to 8, 10 jobs in a row.
Yeah.
And that's like 10 weeks, you know, of my life that is unpaid. And, you know, it's a lot of work that goes into treatment. There's a lot of writing and feedback and building the treatment, image selection,
getting
all that.
Getting on calls. Which is the most daunting stuff. It's
exactly.
It's very anxiety driven. Yeah.
Exactly. And pitching and everything. Yeah. And so, you know, I think the industry it would be amazing to change that system and process where, you know, the director and production company gets compensated, even just a little bit.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be much.
So you're saying like it's not like you're asking for $10,000 or something. It's like just like a couple grand.
Yeah.
Something.
A couple grand would be great. You know, even $1,000 would be amazing. Just to, you know, I don't know. I think that's shows a level of respect for work, you know, and for idea generation. You're definitely helping the agency as well fine tune their own concept.
Right. Can you mention what you were talking about earlier in terms of the creative sort of getting snuck into, like you didn't win a job, but some of the creative, without naming names, obviously, when you saw something that was like very clearly from your treatment that you didn't win, you know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, every director goes through this as well, where you pitch an idea and you're offering a lot of different ideas, you know, whether it's music, whether it's location, casting, story beats, whatever it is. And sometimes you see those little details in the final spot.
Yeah.
So that eclectic, you know,
even though
song,
you didn't win.
Yeah, the song choice that you put in there or that very, you know, exciting story element you add into the script. And it suddenly appears in the final spot that you don't win.
It's like
always interesting.
It's not like they're taking the idea of like whip pans or something.
No.
You know? It's like specific
very
elements
specific.
Sometimes.
This has probably happened to me like half a dozen times.
Really?
Yeah. I would say over the last like 6, 7 years for sure. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's not even intentional. Maybe like they already had that idea or they already had, you know, and then... Yeah. Me saying that scene idea was affirmation for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying they're actively stealing. No one's actively stealing. Maybe subconscious.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are, you know, they love that song that I offered up and they're going with that.
I've also experienced this where they bring three directors in to pitch and then it just goes away all of a sudden for everybody. You know what I mean? Sometimes it feels like the idea isn't cooked enough and almost like they're going out for ideas sometimes, you know, without maybe the intention of completing the whole thing, because it is a little bit, it's unfair for the production companies as well.
For sure. You know, it's a lot of free work put in from the producers. They're you know, bidding, they're going back and forth with the agency producer, trying to get the budget, you know, under their level as well. And at the same time, in tandem, you have the whole creative team, the designers, the director, everyone working together to make this thing, offering all these ideas and all this time and effort. And, you know, they may never even show the client your treatment ever. Right. So it's a weird, funny game. I hope evolves to where, you know, the agencies maybe or clients can compensate a little bit, even just a tiny bit, to every production company pitching. Yeah. Everyone is paid a little bit out of their giant budgets.
Because to them, it's just a line item. It could just be a line item.
It's a simple line item for sure.
We have, you know, I'm sure they're paying for people to cost consultant or something. Like, you have budget within your budget. Put 10 grand aside for three pitches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which is minuscule.
That's so nothing.
It was nothing for $1 million budget, you know? Yeah.
It's like a tip. Because I think
it's less than a tip, actually.
It's way less than a tip.
It's literally what's 20% of $1,000.
It's like a nice gesture. Yeah. I'll say that. But yeah, I do wonder if, because yeah, I'm sure that at the end of losing 8-10 pitches or something in a row, you start to go, do I want to work this hard the next time? Do I want to work this hard the next time after that and the next time after that?
I find, you know, the ones where you go in and the work they want is clearly on your reel and you expect to have a better chance at those. I find I don't win those.
Interesting.
The ones I tend to win are the ones where I'm a little more uncertain about it. You know, I'm offering some unique ideas or different angles to this concept that they've been living with for so long. And I think they're just refreshed by this new take.
Yeah.
You know, I find that's often the case. You know, it obviously depends on the agency and what they want in the end. But I always try to suss out how open they are to a little bit of a change or my ideas coming in or, you know, how much freedom there is in this concept.
Right.
Sometimes on the call, like, nope, this is it. You know, they're storyboarded, it's been tested. We can't change anything. Even that, I'll offer some ideas, but, you know, I know I won't lean as heavily on those new ideas. But, you know, it's music to my ears when I hear the agency say, you know, we want your take. We want to see what else is out there. Yeah. What is a different point of view into the story? And that's when I think where I shine as a director is the new ideas and the ideation process.
Interpreting
of it all.
Things.
Yeah. And, you know, I think naturally I'll probably care more about that if I can bring in my own vision and ideas into that, into the thing they've been working on for so long. But in terms of like winning, man, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
It's, you have no idea. You know, sometimes I feel like I do an amazing pitch and it doesn't go our way. Or sometimes I feel like I do a terrible pitch and we happen to win it. So,
yeah. Are you a pretty high anxiety person?
I just learned I have ADHD, which is funny. Okay. Like, I can never focus on anything. This is my biggest issue for so long, was just my wandering brain. It just kind of goes everywhere all at once. And I just learned so much later in life that my brain doesn't function that normally.
Did they try to get you on medication immediately or something?
No, I got to do testing, but you know, I feel like doing a lot of reading and also my aunt telling me, like 10 years ago, that I do have ADHD. She's a pharmacist. She's like, oh, yeah. It's just a throwaway conversation. Oh, yeah, you have ADHD. It's fine.
That's funny.
And so for me, before pitch calls, weirdly, it's about just trying to focus on that specific, like, thing that I want to get across. Like, just sitting, like, half an hour before the call, reading the treatment again, but then just almost rehearsing the first, like, minute of that call, just like what I'm going to open with is what
if you get in, you get in your flow, then you're good.
I can, then it just comes naturally, but it's usually like the first minute that I really try to like rehearse a little bit.
Yeah.
And just get that conversation going. And that's really what I try to focus on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause you feel like I can imagine that there is like kind of one central nugget mm-hmm. in the treatment that is probably your take, mm-hmm. you know, that you feel is different from everybody else. It's like what you find important to what they brought you, you know? Is that something you're trying to identify?
That's something I learned over the years for sure, is going with a very specific angle, like that one or two or maybe three things that they'll remember about you and that pitch. I mean, it could be visual, right? It could be, you know, the way that sound is really prevalent in this. And that's what I really want to emphasize in this. That's, I'm going to keep mentioning sound, you know, and how the sound design and soundscape is going to support the story, their idea. Or is it the camera work specifically, and be very specific about that camera work, you know, wide angle up close or long lens further away, observational, like how do you make them remember you and those like key points immediately. Right. And I find that's helped me a lot in terms of pitching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most frustrating part to you specifically?
That's hard. I don't know. I feel like all of it's hard in a lot of ways. Yeah. It's all surprising. It's always different, which is what I love about the job. But definitely, you know, I'm way more confident than 5 years ago in terms of like going on set, talking to agencies and really having that deeper collaboration. You know, I think sometimes obviously you deal with big egos, and that's always mm-hmm. tough for me. You know, I have a very chill set. I like to have everyone on the same level. There's no like distinct power dynamics. Like obviously there's a hierarchy and that has to be there, but I like a very chill, no yelling set. And sometimes you will have that personality coming in. I find that sometimes challenging.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
What's your, do you do anything on set that is, you find like specific to you in terms of setting that mood?
I mean, I like keeping the crew happy. You know, that's a big thing for me is keeping everyone from the PA to the first AD just really happy and joyful. I mean, we're making commercials and, you know, we should be having fun doing this. And obviously you're pushing the creative, you're trying to make the best thing possible. But I think sometimes people forget the joy of this job mm-hmm. and how much fun it can be. And so for me, it's like the little things like, you know, obviously crafty has to be good.
Yeah.
catering has to be good.
Yeah, I'll tell you this much. I've been on a lot of sets. And I can remember specifically my favorites because of the crafty.
Crafty dude, yeah.
Weirdly enough.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe that's the little kind of like chubby boy in me where I'm just like, but I remember it was on a Cole Webley set, actually. Mm. It was in Utah. He's going to love that I'm saying this, by the way. Thanks for the experience, Cole. But he had me come do like second unit stuff for this like Christmas spot. But there was this crafty service that they would walk around, and I'm sure I'm going to say this and everybody's like, it's not that weird, like whatever, but they would walk around with like platters and like they come into set and they kind of like whisper in your ear, like, would you like some fruit? We have strawberries and apples and do you want to eat? And I'm like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. But you whisper back as well.
Yeah.
Like there's an energy to the whisper. I feel like it's so powerful.
Yeah. It was this, it's weird how like just hospitality goes like so far on set. Yeah.
It's a hard job too.
It's hard.
You're on your feet all day, grinding for 5-6 days a week. I mean, if budget allows, I love to have that like extra snack at the end of the day or end of a hard day, you know,
an ice cream truck or something.
Yeah. Ice cream truck or like a nice coffee cart. I think there's one time I ordered dumplings for everyone you know, I like to bring in the Asian culture as much as I can and, you know, give people something they may never have had before.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously this is all budget dependent, but if I can do it, I'll do it. Just that little thing of appreciation goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good point.
Yeah.
Do you have trouble kind of coming down off of set, like off of jobs?
Definitely. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's such a high. I mean, the commercial grind especially is like dopamine hits all the time, right? You're just like pitching, losing, winning, you know, going on set, you're flying around. And I think that's why for me it was hard for me to take a step back from commercials and take a very conscious effort to just write and be alone and live life a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the grind can almost like make you forget about time in a weird way. I think like 2021, it just blitzed by. I don't even remember most of it because I was just working. So this year felt, you know, I got to appreciate time a little more and a little more peace. And it was a bit more soul fulfilling for me to write and develop my own things.
Yeah.
But yeah, the come down's hard for sure.
Yeah. It's hard for me to get home and not immediately just start working on something sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what that beer after a long shoot day is like the best thing in the world. Yeah.
Well, you're about to move to LA, right?
I am.
Making the jump.
I am making the jump.
What was the sort of mindset behind that in terms of how long have you lived here? Like
For 6 years. Okay. Yeah. I think it's just a change of pace. The weather, obviously, lemon trees. Obviously the industry is there. I think the thing that scares me a little bit about LA is that everyone's in the industry, which is a little nerve wracking. You know, I think I appreciate New York City for its diversity in that aspect. But you know, I have a lot of great friends there. I would love to get a dog, as I transition into film and TV, it feels like it makes sense. Even if it's a temporary move for 3 to 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever it is. I never had a chance to live there. Never had a chance to really explore and network and meet the right people over there. Kind of see what happens there.
Yeah. Do you have like a TV show, could be already done with, canceled, whatever, that you would be like, I wish I had directed an episode on that TV show? Or something going right now? Or something from the past?
I mean, I think everyone says Atlanta.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you know Hero?
I don't. I admire him a lot. He's an incredible director. Severance I thought was brilliant. It's funny, like TV, it's really what's top of mind. I don't remember anything anymore. I don't know, how do you feel about this? I feel like I forget everything after a day.
With TV?
With everything. I feel like the pace, everything is going.
It has to be really good for me
really
to like, because there's certain things like we were talking a movie about, you were talking, telling me about Tar that you saw recently.
Mm-hmm.
And there's movies like that, that I'm sure like for some reason can like imprint on your brain immediately, like really deeply, you know what I mean? Like first time I saw Y Tu Mamá También, or like even The Square, like, which is a more recent movie. Mm-hmm. You're like, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like a movie, you have more of like a finite emotional journey, right? Yeah. And you can like begin, middle, end, and then you finish it and you remember that feeling in like a little pocket.
Yeah.
And then TV just goes on forever, right? It can go on forever. And that may never be like a finite circle, each episode, right? But I find just like people who take swings and are just original, creating something a little, I don't know, more daring.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I remember more, even if it doesn't fully hit at that moment. Like Tar is a great example. Like, I think it's a masterpiece. People may not like it.
Right.
People will love it. But it's such a distinct film, something I've never seen before. And I remember those in The Square and Triangle Sadness. It just goes in very unexpected ways.
I love that you said Atlanta though, because I feel like Hero and Donald Glover and all those guys specifically, I feel like there are some episodes of Atlanta that do give me that same feeling.
Oh yeah.
Because especially in the last seasons, first seasons, like it felt more TV showish.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were still maybe getting their bearings, still equally as good. But like this last season, and it felt like everything was so singular throughout that season, that was like, this episode is about this. Even shows like The Bear or something, you know, we have like, we're going to do a one take episode here. And then this one is going to be not in the restaurant at all. It's like, you can kind of attach almost like a movie does, you know, in the same way.
You know how many one-shot episodes there are going to be after The Bear? Oh. Everyone's going to try to do episode 7 of The Bear.
Well, did they get it from True Detective? You know what I mean?
Ooh. Oh, that one sequence in episode
season. That one, like, 15-minute-long thing.
You know, that felt like a movie to me. That The Bear, specifically. It felt like a four-hour movie. Yeah. And I think that a lot of shows will probably try to emulate that more finite feeling a
little
more.
Why do you think that there's a lot of TV shows that are going, like dramatic TV shows that are typically 55 minutes are now
30. Yeah.
Even like shows like The Patient on FX, I think, is...
It's like 20 minutes some episodes.
And it's like, it's like one little minute and then...
It's a short film, man.
It's like a short film.
Yeah. They're like little episodes, short films.
Sometimes I feel like that could be frustrating for the audience. Yeah. Sometimes it is frustrating for me because sometimes I'm... And who is it? Who am I to decide like what deserves a whole episode of something?
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm like, that took you 22 minutes? You know what I mean? You could have done that.
There's some episodes, man, like they just stretch it out over 60 minutes, though. Like, I appreciate the shorter, tighter storytelling, but you're right. Yeah. Like, sometimes it's a little too fast.
Which is why I love The Bear.
Yes.
The Bear was just, like, in your face from the first second, you know?
I think I appreciate that show so much because they jump so far into the action. So, like, they don't explain anything until way later. You just, like, you're right in it, and the information is slowly trickled out, and I appreciate that. You know, I don't want to be... told everything.
Right.
I think audience members are so smart now, having watched so much TV, so much film.
Yeah.
I think everyone in the world knows story structure, even if they don't know it, you know, on a very conscious level. Subconsciously, they know every story beat, the midpoint, you know, the inciting incident, all that stuff. So how do you subvert that a little bit? How do you change that? How do you surprise people, you know?
Do you have sort of your canon of directors that you sort of... maybe intangibly find yourself like emulating?
I mean, I think the film that got me into filmmaking was City of God.
Oh my God.
Which is like the most immersive, insane experience I've had watching a movie.
Good.
And I was younger when I saw it.
Yeah.
And that really made me love movies. And also foreign movies. Like, it just opened up a whole world that sort of surprised me and I knew nothing about. And so I really got into foreign films after that. Like, just really started soaking in all the Asian cinema and, you know, from all over the world, French, Italian, everything. And I think I definitely gravitate towards those filmmakers. Mm. You know, like, I love Hirokazu Koreeda. Yeah. He's like a fucking master. And just like the way he can let scenes play out and you're just watching humanity unfold in such unexpected but really nuanced, simple ways. Like, I hope to get there one day. That's like, that's my North Star, is that level of storytelling where it doesn't have to be big and brash all the time. It's just so simple and finite and small, you know? Which is really hard to do.
It's very
like,
hard.
Like, storytelling, I'm realizing, where you don't show as much information and leave it to sort of interpretation, that's the hardest filmmaking.
Yeah.
That's like the master level filmmaking. You know, like Tar is a great example of that.
And for it like to be that ambiguous and loose.
Yeah.
And to know that the audience is also connecting with it.
They also understand.
That it's not just getting lost in some, that's very difficult.
Yeah, it's very hard.
It's a lot of faith too that, like that it is working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I want to make like a Boogie Nights, you know, like I want to do like a There Will Be Blood, which is like big, bold filmmaking as well. So I think maybe there's a middle ground there, but,
I get so jealous of directors who have like committed to period pieces sometimes.
I know.
I'm just like, God, that's so much fun, dude.
I mean, I just imagine trying to build an oil rig and literally having, you know, in a practical way, this black sludge shooting out. I mean, that's like you write that and then... As a director, like, fuck, how do I shoot this?
He do that? Because you don't even think about it.
How do you find it as a writer and then a director directing your own stuff? I mean, for me, it's a funny process because I write something and I don't think about it. It's like, oh, this is right for the story.
Yeah.
But then when you're shooting it and you're directing it and you're trying to make it, you're like, why did I write this? Like, this is such a dumb, hard idea to shoot. Why did I do this? I did this. You know, who's this dumb writer?
Yeah. Personally, I just got through with the short film that takes place underneath a bed.
Like, wow.
the, I think probably 90% of it is from the perspective of someone underneath the bed. Mm. And there's like a scene that you never see these people, but they're in the room and you see their feet, and we're shooting like 360 underneath this bed.
Wow.
And I had very little money. We had some money, but like just enough to like pay people to come and do it. And I thought when I was writing it, that it would be very easy because we're just this, we're under one perspective, mm-hmm. you know? And as long as I can figure out how to do that, then I could shoot a lot because we're just right here. But as soon as my DP, Steve Connery, came in, it was like, he was like, this is, you got to cut a bed in half. You got to do something. Like, mm-hmm. you got to let me get a camera underneath there. And we had to like figure out some really interesting ways to like, so what we did figure out, which I'm sure after I say this, people are going to rip it because it's so, it's like right there in front of everybody. But we ended up just going to Bed Bath & Beyond and buying a Lazy Susan, like a thin Lazy Susan, mm-hmm. and stripping the Alexa to, everything's on its sides. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no top handle. So make it as short as possible. And then put it on the Lazy Susan. And then you could literally just, you could go 360 by just doing this, you know? And it's very smooth, especially if you get a marble one.
Mm.
Not wood. The wood is
That's
not.
That's when you know you have money. You get the marble one.
You get the faux marble one.
Yeah.
But you're all right. You're writing this stuff and you're like, this is going to be so easy, you know?
Yeah.
And it actually, I feel like the more simple things are the harder things.
I agree.
Which is annoying.
Yeah.
Because they should be simple.
Yeah.
But
weirdly enough, when it's hard, just go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I feel like that's the the solution to all problems in film is Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find like sometimes the equipment and sort of the gadgets are too much?
Of course.
Like, all you need is a camera and a tripod or whatever, you know, or like a dolly.
Yeah.
But do you really need some of the toys for everything?
I mean, because when he was saying like he had great, like there is a way to do it, you know, but like cutting a bed in half is a way to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could put a dolly underneath there and whatever, but I couldn't cut a bed in half. Like that is the more expensive version of the thing. You have a bed cut this way, you have a bed cut long ways, and then you have a bed cut the other long ways, you know? And then you could like just flag off everything else, but that's too expensive.
Yeah.
You know?
And it limits you quite a bit too in terms of your point of view, right?
Even if I had the money.
Yeah.
I'd still do this.
Yeah.
I'll do the
gold-plated Lazy Susan. Yeah.
Or maybe I'll build one that's motorized.
Oh, yeah.
That's maybe what I would spend the money on.
And you sit in the chair and then just control it from there.
It's like on a little dial. You go left, you go right. You know what I'm saying?
That's the dream, man. That's the dream. Anyways.
All right, dude. Thank you so much for being here.
Dude, thank you for having me. I appreciate your beanie, by the way. It's Beanie Brothers. Yeah.
It's good. I should have said that at the beginning.
And the Beanie Brothers.
Yeah. Next time on the Music Bed Podcast, from Netflix Concrete Cowboys starring Idris Elba, we chat with the writing duo and founders of Neighborhood Film Co., Ricky Staub and Dan Walzer.
I think it's an odd, almost like paradox, which is like part of what I think helps you, makes you authentic, is your ability to hold your craft loosely as not the end of your identity. I think that's what allows you to write something that will never be read and it holds value. It allows you to work on something for 10 years and it never sees the light of day because the process matters, but it also doesn't define you.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard of music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with another filmmaker you know and subscribe to be notified for the next episodes.